what I'm about to share with you, which is about Dr. Laura Schlesinger's book, The Proper Care and Feeding of Husbands, is not magic. And there is no guarantee that the wisdom that I'm going to be talking about, both gained personally and what Dr. Laura has to say, there's no guarantee that it will melt a husband's hard heart or repair his brokenness. But maybe I can give some direction to loving your husband well. That's all we have control over is what we can do. We have no control over how they respond to it. And so what I would like to do is just let's put the husbands away on the shelf for the moment and just talk about what's within our ability to make a difference, to what's in our ability to change. When Dr. Laura, who is a radio talk show host, she's kind of a call-in psychologist, when she wrote this book, The Proper Care and Feeding of Husbands, she said that we need this book because millions of wives either don't know how to love their husbands wisely and well, or they're too self-centered to see it as important. And in our culture, being self-centered is elevated as some sort of value that everybody, of course, lives with. But it doesn't make for very good relationships, does it? She attributes 40-plus years of gender feminism for a big part of this problem, which is the view that men are evil and stupid and brutish and worthless, which is absolutely not true. When God made men, he did a great job making man in his own image, and then he went on to make an even better job making woman in his own image. But man and woman are both good creatures of God. And there's nothing wrong with being a man or a woman. I think the core cause of our broken marriages and relationships is selfishness, the sinfulness of self-centeredness, and everybody has to deal with that. So a lot of what I'm going to be sharing about today is a loving, respectful suggestion that you take your natural orientation towards selfishness and set it aside in serving and loving your husband well. In doing that, you will also be serving and loving your children well. Because it really is true that we can give no greater gift to our children than to love husband and wife, to love each other well. We need help in this area of marriages, which is why the Bible instructs us older Titus 2 women to instruct you younger women to love your husbands and children, to be self-controlled and pure, to be busy at home, not a problem, to be kind, and to be subject to their husbands so that no one will malign the Word of God. That comes from the Bible. What I'm about to share with you this morning, I think, will go a long way toward helping you do those things. God gives us incredible power as women. To be female is to automatically be a person with influence. Dr. Laura writes, "Men are born of women, and they spend the rest of their lives yearning for a woman's acceptance and approval. Men admittedly are putty in the hands of a woman they love. Give him direct communication, respect, appreciation, food, and good loving, and he'll do just about anything you wish, foolish or not." That is absolutely true. Our sons grow up wanting to please mom. And then they grow up, most of them grow up into husbands who want to please their wives. It is a very wonderful position that we are in. Very important not to exploit it. So we're going to be looking at these five aspects of the proper care and feeding of husbands, starting with a man's need for direct communication. We are very verbal creatures, have you noticed? We generate women, girls, females in general, generate 3 times as many words per day as males. Now, if you are the mother of boys, you know that there is a difference between generating words and generating noise. Noise does not count in communicating verbal thoughts and expressions. But, you know, there's a reason we are so much more verbal than most men. And that is because, as the incredible privilege of being mothers, we are given the opportunity to love infants and toddlers from the very beginning, and we're the ones that they're around when they're learning to talk. And in order to learn to talk, they need to swim in an ocean of words. And so we're constantly talking to our kids. It's not the same thing as plopping them in front of the TV, because there's no interaction there. So our design to be verbal is God's gift to us, to each other, and to our children. But the fact that we are so verbal, and men, most men are not, can frustrate men with the overwhelming number of our words. And so please remember not to expect your husband to be a girlfriend. Men make wonderful husbands but terrible girlfriends. That's why I love it that you are part of the Moms Connection, because you have people you can call who will appreciate your need to talk, and whose capacity to receive and listen is much bigger than that of most men. So, to be wise, a wife uses his word or her words for optimum connecting value, what's going to connect our hearts to his. Choosing her timing well. Let me just tell you, when you're lying in bed and you're horizontal and it's in the dark and you're falling asleep, that is not the time to start a conversation with your husband. He will not appreciate it. He will probably resent it. So choose another time. But the most important thing I want you to hear me say is start with the bottom line first. Because for men, words are about facts and information only. They do not look to words as a way of helping us feel one and connected and, oh my gosh, enjoying each other's company the way we do as women. When we tell a story to girlfriends, most of us want to unfold our story in all its glorious detail, as if it were this tapestry that we were opening up one fold at a time. Men do not appreciate that. They want the bottom line first. And if the bottom line is, our son broke his arm and I had to take him to the emergency room, but he's going to be okay, start there rather than, so Kurt was in the tree this morning, you know, and there's a long time between Kurt in the tree and getting home from the ER. So start with the bottom line first, and then he'll have the big picture and he'll know where to stick the details that you want to give him. It's a great way to honor our husbands and all men in general if we start with the bottom line first. And they go, oh, I know where this story is going. Men make terrible mind readers. So be direct in what you have to say. Dropping subtle hints does not work with most men. Now, if you're married to one of these emotionally sensitive, creative, artistic kind of guys, I am. Ray is far more sensitive than the average bear, and so I can be more subtle with him. Most men, it doesn't work well. And so you need to just come right out and say what you would think of would be rude if you said it to a woman. But most men, it's like, okay, good, now I know what you're thinking. One writer compared men and women to butterflies and buffaloes. Guess which one is which. And so we, being the butterfly-like type, you know, we flit around. We're very sensitive to our surroundings. The slightest little breeze will send us flying. Whereas a buffalo will stand there and withstand 30-mile winds and not even notice. Men are buffaloes, and in God's great sense of humor, he has the merry butterflies. So understand that it doesn't work to treat your husband like a butterfly. He is a buffalo. So be direct and tell him exactly what you're thinking. It doesn't mean that a man is insensitive or uncaring or oblivious if he doesn't pick up on the carefully chosen, nuanced words. Just tell him what you're thinking. And also, this one is worth its weight in gold. When you're talking to him, spell out right at the beginning whether you want help and advice or if you're just venting. God made men to be our heroes. They want to be the hero of every situation. They come equipped with a Mr. Fix-It hat. And if we start talking, they're going to go to their default setting, which is, oh, she's got a problem she wants me to fix. If you don't want him to fix it, if all you want is for him to listen and to nod his head and go, poor baby, tell me more, which men need to be taught how to do that. He needs to be told, I'm about to tell you something. I'm really frustrated. I'm not asking you to fix it. I just want you to listen. Like you care, okay? And so tell him that up front, and it will be so much easier for him, because it's very frustrating when we start venting and they're trying to run through all these scenarios for fixing things, and we're not interested in their scenarios for fixing things because we don't think they need to fix it. We'll take care of it by ourselves. Thank you very much. Or it can't be fixed. I just need you to care and to listen. So tell him up front which category this goes in. Now, let me just tell you, if you're calling him and you say, I'm on 75 and I've got a flat tire, you are not venting. You want help and assistance, you know, and that one he could probably figure out. But it's helpful for him to know which category of communication you're talking about. Finally, take whatever he says at face value. Men are not complex creatures like we women are. And so it doesn't do any good to overanalyze what men say, because they're just not that complicated. So remember back in junior high and high school when a boy would say something and you would spend hours on the phone with your girlfriend parsing and analyzing and thinking, now, did he mean this or did he mean... No, men are not like that. Let me give you something that's worth its weight in gold about the differences between men and women. Women are, our minds are kind of like a ball of yarn where everything's connected to everything else. Other people have compared it to a bowl of spaghetti, where you touch one little strand of spaghetti and the whole bowl jiggles, right? Because everything's connected to everything else. Our brains are literally hardwired differently than men. Okay, men's minds are more like a chest of drawers, and everything in their life has its own drawer. And only one drawer can be open at a time. So he's got the wife drawer and the dad drawer and the work drawer and the driving drawer and the basketball drawer and the internet drawer and the TV drawer. Only one drawer can be open at a time. And here's the weight in gold part. He has a drawer labeled nothing. And when that drawer is open and you say, what are you thinking? And he goes, nothing. Believe him. Every time I share about the nothing drawer in a mixed audience, the men start clapping, you know, because it's like, oh, it's so good to be understood. And then some of them start elbowing their wives. So just take a man's words at face value. Most of the time, you'll be very safe there. Okay, the second thing I want to talk about is respect. One listener to Dr. Laura's radio show named Edgar wrote, there are a few things that men want so bad they would do anything for it. I think a good number of men want respect more than love. They like to feel that they have some power. I nearly cry when you tell a woman caller to respect her husband. There is so much selfishness in the world, in marriages. Prosperity has allowed women to be so independent and thus so selfish. I always feel as though I come last. My feelings come last. My needs come last. I was so struck by this one line. A good number of men want respect more than love. God knew this. He made a man with a primary need to feel respected the same way that he made us women with a primary need to be loved. Ephesians 5:33, very economically, has the primary needs of both husbands and wives in one verse, which says, each one of you, speaking of husbands, each one of you also must love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her husband. Dr. Emerson Eggerich of loveandrespect.com, and the book called Love and Respect, one of the best marriage books ever written. He points out that this verse commands a husband to love his wife. Why? Because We need love like we need air to breathe. And this verse also commands us as wives to respect our husbands, because our husbands need respect like they need air to breathe. We are nowhere commanded in Scripture as wives to love our husbands and children. You know why? Because God made us that way. It's the most natural thing in the world. When we are loved, we just love and respond in response. But we need to be told straight out, respect your husband. A husband has to be told to love his wife because he's so self-centered by nature. That's one of the reasons why it's not good for man to be alone. He needs a helpmate. He needs someone to remind him, you are not alone, buddy. There are other people in the world, and he needs to be told to love his wife because we need it so desperately. So what does respect look like? Respect means treating someone in a way that builds him up and doesn't tear him down. It means never denigrating him, never attacking him. There is no place for name-calling in any relationship at all, but most especially marriages. Before we got married, Ray and I went through some wonderful premarital counseling, and we have been happily married for 38 years, for which I am so grateful. But one of the things that we determined early on is that we would never call each other names. And I can tell you that it is possible, because I've got a testimony of 38 years of never, ever calling each other a name. If that has been a part of your history, you can stop it today. And you can say, this is where I draw the line in the sand, and I will never again call you a name that's not steeped in endearment and affection. You don't have to feel it to call someone sweetheart. You could be feeling really ugly and pukey and prickly inside and still say the name sweetheart. But please, I beg you, take name-calling off the table. It's so disrespectful. As you know, if you've ever been called a name, it's incredibly disrespectful. Respect means always treating the other person with the dignity that they deserve as a person made in the image of God. Every single human being on the face of the planet deserves to be treated with dignity and respect simply because we are made in God's image and we are very, very precious to Him. And simply because we're precious to God, because everybody is precious to God, that person deserves to be shown dignity and respect. Respect means grasping that a man's needs and wants are every bit as valid and important as a woman's needs and wants. It's real easy for us to think, but mine matter more, and here's the reason. Two words, labor pains. That's not the way it works. Each of us is equally valid and important. Our needs and wants matter. Acknowledging that our husband's needs and wants matter just as much as ours is a way of showing respect to them. And respect means not venting to others, especially not our children. One woman wrote to Dr. Laura, "No emotional outlet is worth damaging my husband's reputation, particularly in our own family." Lori shared with you my bio before I came up here, and part of the joy of my life for the last 14 years has been serving as a volunteer with Living Hope Ministries, which helps people dealing with unwanted homosexuality. I can't tell you how many stories I have heard of men and women who are dealing with unwanted same-sex attractions. Some of them have been deep in the lesbian lifestyle or the gay lifestyle for decades before Jesus they met Jesus and he started drawing them out. One of the things we hear over and over again with the men is that their moms were super, super involved, over-involved, very strong, extremely huge connections between mothers and sons. And dads were passive and weak and disengaged. And if mom disrespected dad, the message to the son, and this is not just sons who later identify as gay. This is all sons. The message to the son is, men are worthless, men are stupid, I don't care about men, and you can tell that by the way I treat your father. And so when a boy looks at his dad and says, I'm like my dad, my body looks a lot more like his than I look like mom, but I don't like the way my mom, who is the most important woman in my life, I don't like the way she treats my dad. So I don't know that I want to be a man. I have no confidence in being a man. If that's what it means to be a man, I don't want to have any part of it. And that's what we see. We have literally seen with thousands of men who've come through the ministry that I volunteer with, is how many men have no confidence in their gender security. They don't feel it's a good thing to be a man. And so the thing is, too, with the women that we talk to, particularly those over 30, because everything's different with people under 30 in terms of the messages they get about sexuality. But so many of the women that we minister to, their moms were disrespectful to their dads, and they loved their daddies. And they have a wonderful relationship with their dads, but then they watch their moms being disrespectful to their dads, and they're thinking, that's what it means to be a woman, is to treat wonderful men like my dad with contempt and disrespect? I don't think I want a part of that. If that's what it means to be feminine and be a woman, I don't want to have any part of that. And so we can have terrible repercussions in our families by what we say, but through how we treat our the opposite spouse. There are three A's that men long for from their wives. Three A's are incredibly powerful because your children also need these from you: attention, affection, and affirmation. Those three A's, attention, affection — that would be both verbal and physical affection — and affirmation, are incredibly powerful. We have a God-given need to receive those three things from our parents, and then from our peers, and then ultimately from our spouse. And men long for these things from their wives. Most mothers, as a friend of mine says, even jacked up heroin addicts, still give their kids the three A's of attention, affection, and affirmation. And so children grow up knowing, I can get those three A's from my mom. Well, then later on, as men grow older and then they marry somebody, they expect that the primary woman in their life, now their wife, is also going to give them attention, affection, and affirmation. And we meet a God-given need when we give those things to our husbands. Respect means paying attention to what they do and their needs for these three things, but especially starting with paying attention to what they do simply because they're the ones doing it. It means sometimes just stopping what we're doing with our interminable list of things that have to be done around the house and just sitting with them, watching TV, going, I'm wasting time. You can't do anything else. Now, here's the deal. See, we as women, we multitask because the survival of the family depends on it, right? But men, most men do not multitask, and they do not understand that we can. This is something that I'm dealing with right now in my marriage, is that my husband, in order to feel like I'm giving him attention, wants me to sit next to him in the living room at night and watch TV with him. And meanwhile, I'm thinking about all the things that are not getting done. And I'm thinking about the deadlines, the calligraphy deadlines that have to be met. And I'm thinking about I'm the web servant for Probe Ministries, right? I could be sitting there with my laptop on my lap getting stuff done. But that doesn't count because I'm not being with him, being fully paying attention, with being engaged with him, to whatever he's watching, talking to him about it during the commercials. And he tells me, I feel so loved when you just sit and do nothing but be with me. And so I'm constantly telling myself, I am making an investment in my marriage. Yes, I am not getting stuff done. In 2 weeks from today, I will not remember what I didn't get done, but I will remember investing in my marriage. So respect means paying attention to what it is that they need and just being with him in there, in his place of where he is. Respect also means allowing the other person to be different than we are, allowing them to do things differently than we do. Several years ago, I had an interesting conversation with a young mom who said, "It drives me crazy the way my husband parents wrong." Really, tell me about that. She goes, "He makes peanut butter and jelly sandwiches wrong." Really? Yes. everybody knows, you put the peanut butter on one piece of bread, you put the jelly on the other piece of bread, you put them together. That's how you make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. But does my husband do it right? No. He puts the peanut butter on the bread, and then he puts the jelly on the peanut butter. I mean, really. I said, and you are getting exercised about this because my way is the right way. She literally said that. And I said, how's that working for your intimacy? We need to give our husbands the freedom to not be us, to not be women, to not be mom. And let me just tell you, as one who walks alongside people who have not been parented really well, that children need to have both mothers and fathers being very different from each other in the way they relate to us. Let dads be dads. They're not going to have, most of them are not going to have the attention to detail that we do. They're not going to do things the way we do. And you know what? The kids survive. You know, if they go a night without brushing their teeth, did you know they're still going to make it to adulthood? And they will not lose their teeth in the process. You know, we've got this thing of, but it has to be done this way. Yeah. More loosey-goosey works really well. Give grace for doing things his way. Dads have different standards. I'm not talking about dangerous and dumb. I'm just saying different is okay, okay? And then finally, one way to give respect is to give grace instead of resenting the things that he does that bug us. And what can make the biggest difference is choosing to change our paradigm through the filter through which we look at those things that he does. So if he leaves his drinking glass on the table in the living room, if he doesn't hang up the towel after his shower, if he leaves his underwear on the floor next to his side of the bed, is that going to drive you crazy? Okay. I get it. Now, here's the question to ask. Is he doing it with malice in his heart toward me? Does he mean evil toward me when he does this? Probably not. That is, it makes a huge difference. Because when somebody does something that's just a matter of, you know, he's already got the work drawer open. He's so past the hanging up the towel, you know, and the towel in the bathroom drawer. He's already opening up that work drawer. It's not that he's bad or he's evil or he's mean. He's just paying attention to something else. Here is the gold standard question. If your husband dropped dead today and you were suddenly plunged into the horrible world of being a widow, what would you miss terribly tomorrow and next week and next month and 10 years from today that bugs you, that drives you crazy today, but you would miss it because it meant he was not there? And so, honestly, that's one of the best things you can do. When you see something that bugs you and you're tempted to roll your eyes and sigh, cluck your teeth, you know, just say, okay, what if I never saw that again because I lost him? And it can completely change your perspective on it. Because then you realize, this scripture says, love covers a multitude of sins. And it also covers a multitude of just overlooked things. Just let it go. I just, to the glory of your marriage and to you as a woman, just let it go. It's really not important. I am a calligrapher, as you heard. I have had for decades a piece of calligraphy hanging in our bathroom over the toilet because I'm the mother of two boys. Okay? So they would look at it every time they peed. The grid through which I try to live my life, the question, in the scope of eternity, what does this matter? Let me just tell you, so many things, you pass it through that grid and you go, it doesn't matter. On to the next thing. And it makes it so much easier to just let it go. Okay, next thing we're going to talk about is appreciation. Ask any woman what she wants, and near the top of her list, she'll tell you, I want to be acknowledged and appreciated for the things that I do. Well, guess what? So do our husbands. So does any man. One man named Evan wrote to Dr. Laura, my wife feels that if she doesn't remind me again and again, something won't get done. But the fact is, it makes me feel like her child, and that mommy needs to check up on me. It's degrading. I want to be admired. I want to be acknowledged for being the breadwinner and making sure that we're all well taken care of. My greatest pleasure is when I feel like her hero, like her man, not her boy. It doesn't matter what a husband's primary love language is. Every man wants to be shown appreciation for what he does. And one of the things that you can do is ask God to help you by opening your eyes to the things that your husband does for which you can show him appreciation. And one of the best things you could possibly do is just go get a little notebook, just a little notebook, and make it your gratitude journal, and decide to keep it every day for, start with a month. You might even want to go to 3 months, or you might even want to go for a year. And every day, but before you go to bed, at some point during the day, write down 3 things that you appreciate about your husband. And then sprinkle it into the conversation, and just say, I really appreciate that you fill in the blank. Honestly, in our house, that's the culture of the Bolin household, is you hear the word thank you and appreciate a lot, because it's just become part of the culture of our family. But here's the cool thing. When you're finished writing your gratitude journal, make it a gift to him for your anniversary, for Christmas, for his birthday. And you would be handing him physical evidence of your appreciation and your gratitude and the fact that he is not invisible to you, he is not unappreciated by you, and he could read page after page of what you have been doing over a long period of time to remind yourself of how good he is, the things that he does that you appreciate. If you are having trouble seeing the good and positive things that your husband is and does, ask God to open your eyes, because he's got perspective that you don't. And we all need help with opening our eyes. That's a prayer for any wife. God, open my eyes to see my husband the way you see him. Especially let me see the good things about him that you appreciate. Here's some ideas of what you could put in a gratitude journal and what you could say to him. Thank him for going to work every morning, even when he doesn't feel like it. Thank him for being faithful to you. Thank him for loving you. Thank him for giving you a child or children, or even if he isn't able to, for wanting to. Thank him for the acts of service, like taking out the garbage and changing the oil in your car and mowing the yard. Some of you may want to thank your husband for doing the cooking or cleaning up the kitchen. Actually, I've heard it said that the sexiest thing that a man can do for his wife is to go in and clean up the kitchen. Oh, honey, you look so good to me right now. Like, what am I doing? I am emptying the dishwasher. Exactly. Thank him for bringing home his paycheck and not spending it on gambling or booze or women. That there are so many things that husbands do and we take it for granted, but especially as you hear about other things that people do that your husband doesn't, thank him for what he does do. And then there's the appreciation and expressing appreciation. Then there's the opposite of appreciation, which is the universal complaint of men, who emailed Dr. Laura about her book, was that their wives criticize, complain, nag, rarely compliment or express appreciation. They're difficult to satisfy. And basically, the wives are not as nice to their husbands as they would be to a stranger who rang the doorbell at 3 o'clock in the morning. And it's very true that we can take our husbands for granted and not be kind to them. So let me make some suggestions. First of all, request, don't demand. Demanding is rude and disrespectful under any circumstances. Don't nag. If you have to ask him to do something more than once, and of course every woman in this room has been in those shoes, here's the secret. Ask as if it were the first time you were asking him to do that. You will remember that it's not, and probably so will he, but do it sweetly. Don't put any edge or energy in your voice. Just ask as if it's the first time. That's how not to nag. Some people need to be reminded because there's a lot going on and they just forgot. It doesn't mean they're evil or wicked. It means they forgot. And so ask again sweetly. Keep your mouth shut about things that don't matter. Ask yourself, is this the hill I want to die on? Do not die on stupid anthills, because not everything is worth fighting over or having a conflict over. Don't be controlling. That's micromanaging. Dr. Laura wrote, when women micromanage, their husbands give up trying to please them, and then the wives complain that their men don't do anything for them. So the more we complain, the more it's going to be counterproductive to what it is that we really want from them. The next part of the proper care and feeding of husbands is support. A man named Roy wrote to Dr. Laura with some good advice for wives. He said, if you can't accentuate the positive, please at least acknowledge it. The world is full of messages to men that there are standards we don't meet. There's always another man who is more handsome, more virile, or more athletic than we are. None of that matters if the most important person in our life looks up to us, accepts us as we are, and loves us even though we aren't perfect. All I know is that the husband who has a wife who supports him and praises him for the positive things that he does is the envy of all the other men who have to live with criticism, sarcasm, and constant reminders of their failures. I loved that. Because men desperately need and want the support of their wives. It's reflected in God's word when he says, it is not good for man to be alone. I will make a helper suitable for him. And then through the Apostle Paul, God instructs wives to relate to their husbands in a way that meets this need when he says, wives, submit to your husbands as to the Lord. Submission is not an ugly word. It's actually the only appropriate response for a creature toward our Creator. And God says, I want you to submit to your husband as well, and which is another word for support. It's basically giving support with a willing, cooperative heart. A wife's submission includes knowing her gifts and strengths and choosing to use them to serve her husband and family. So often, when we are operating from a place of submission, it's a matter of saying, I have a strength in this area, you have a weakness, I can serve you by shoring up your weakness where I'm strong. That could be the way you handle the books, the way you handle money. It could be the way that you keep your home. So many ways in which we use our strengths to support them. God calls us to serve our husbands, and service has a bad name. But the thing is, biblically, both husbands and wives are called to serve God first and then each other. Husbands are actually given the harder job of being called to sacrificially love and serve their wives with Jesus as his pattern. He laid down his life and died for his bride, the church, and husbands are called to do the same thing. Now, it doesn't mean they're usually going to have to physically lose their lives, but God says, I want you, men, to lay down your life and give up what you most want so that you can take care of your wife, to serve your wife, to love your wife. And it means continual self-sacrifice. That is a hard, hard bar to meet. So, what does support look like? What does it look like when we support our men? It means believing in him, telling him, you have what it takes. Ladies, that is one of the most powerful things you can possibly say to a husband, because we're born with a question attached to our heart, am I beautiful? Men are born with little boys that come attached to the question, do I have what it takes? And we need to tell them, you have what it takes. I believe in you. And let me just tell you that if you have sons, they will hear that from you as their mom, you have what it takes, but they'll really believe it when it comes from their dad. Because only a man can imprint masculinity on the heart of a boy, and only a dad's affirmation, son, you've got what it takes, that's what's really going to fill that bucket. We can help, but we cannot take the place of a man. As a matter of fact, one of our favorite things to say to both of our sons is what the father said to Jesus when he was baptized. He said, "This is my beloved son in whom I am well pleased." And he gave the three A's. The father gave the three A's to the son. He paid attention. He showed up at Jesus' baptism. He gave him affection. He called him my beloved son. He gave him verbal affection. And then he gave him affirmation, "In whom I am well pleased." Our sons are 32 and 31. And we, ever since they were little bitty, we have been saying to them, "You are my beloved son in whom I am well pleased." We introduce them to our friends. "Hi, I want you to meet Kurt. This is my beloved son in whom I am well pleased." Neither one of them has ever said, "Mom, that is so cheesy." Never. Never once. They just soak it up. And we need to communicate, "You have what it takes," to our husbands as well as to our sons. It means being his number one fan. Sometimes I introduce myself, "Hi, my name is Sue Boland, and I'm president of the Ray Boland Fan Club. And I'm the head cheerleader for Ray. I'm the head cheerleader on the cheerleading squad." And he also never tells me that's cheesy. He kind of likes that because I really am his number one fan. Support means cultivating a cooperative heart. It means being generous and open-hearted, willing to use your gifts and strengths to help him succeed. It means understanding the importance of making him look good and never saying anything negative in public. I made that very serious commitment before we got married that I would never say anything disrespectful or ugly or negative about Ray in public, and I've kept it because it just became a habit. Creating a home that's a safe haven from the world, where they go, "Oh, I'm leaving work, but yay, I get to come home." Having a warm heart with a positive, cheerful demeanor. Women set the temperature of the home. We are the thermostats. We're not thermometers. We do not register the temperature. We set the thermostat. So we are the ones who decide, is it a warm, comfortable, cheerful place, or is it frozen and chilly and critical? We are the thermostats in our home. I love the proverb that says, well, it's not so much that I love it, I'm intrigued by it. "A quarrelsome wife is like a constant dripping on a rainy day. Restraining her is like restraining the wind or grasping oil with the hand." We set the temperature for our home, and setting a warm, accepting, loving temperature is one of the ways we show support. Being supportive means showing interest in him and his life, and when he talks, we listen with our eyes, our face, rather than "talk to me while I'm emptying the dishwasher." Giving attention with our face. Showing thoughtfulness, paying attention to what he does and doing it. If you are not familiar with Gary Chapman's book, The Five Love Languages, please either get the book or Google it and just do some reading on the internet. Find out what your husband's love language is and love him in that language. It's focused attention, gifts, acts of service, physical touch, and words of affirmation. Those are the five main love languages. Your husband has one of those. Love him in that language. Okay, and then the fifth one that I want to share is good loving. Dr. Laura writes that men need to feel the approval, acceptance, and attachment from their women that comes from physical intimacy. See, for women, when we feel emotionally connected with someone, then it leads into physical intimacy. With men, it's the other way around. When they're shown loving and there's a wonderful time of sex, it tends to open up their heart, and then they're open to more emotional intimacy on the other side of intercourse. A man named Chris writes, "I don't understand why women don't understand that sex is a man's number one need from his wife. It's not just the act and the sensation of pleasure. It's the acceptance by a woman of her man. There's a communion that happens during intercourse that will bond a man to his woman, and he, in turn, will then begin to give of himself emotionally to her." Ladies, today is Valentine's Day. Let me suggest to you that you get a bolt of red ribbon, wrap it around your waist with nothing else, tie a great big bow, and then wrap yourself in a robe, and when he comes into the bedroom tonight, drop the robe. I am your Valentine. Way to make a memory. Wives can discover that giving themselves sexually to their husbands with a warm, open-hearted, loving spirit can be the most effective encouragement to getting their husbands to open up emotionally. And of course, isn't that what we want? We want connection, heart-to-heart connection, emotional connection, which generally happens through words, and often we get that on the other side of giving ourselves to them physically. What attracts men to women is their femininity. And femininity isn't only about appearance, it's also about behaviors. Looking womanly and behaving sweetly and flirtatiously are gifts that wives give to their husbands. We see this modeled in the Song of Solomon in the Old Testament, where the king's bride displays her feminine charms in a holy seduction of her husband, and she tells him what she loves about his body. See, men don't have body images like we do. You know, we look in the mirror and whimper. They look in the mirror and tend to go, you know, and just love each other. And that's why I love their bodies. That's why there are mirrors on the walls at LA Fitness and Anytime Fitness and most gym. It is not there for the women. That's why Curves does not have mirrors on the walls. We do not want to be reminded of what we look like. But men, they could be 350 pounds. They get out of the shower, they go, what a hunk of burning love. They love their bodies that way, you know, and so tell him that what you love about his body. Dr. Laura calls wives to give themselves sexually to their husbands even when they don't feel like it as an act of love. And really, when you think about it, how many times do our husbands get up in the morning and they go to work even when they don't feel about it? We have been given a gift as women. We can always be ready to give ourselves sexually even if we don't feel like it. With our best friend, a tube of KY jelly, we can always be available to them. And so we can give ourselves in the moment. We don't have to, you know, it doesn't take the half an hour to an hour of long warming up sex that usually it takes, because, you know, men are microwaves, women are crockpots, and it just takes us longer to get going. But sometimes it's a matter of, please let me satisfy you. And that is a gift that we can give to our husbands even when we don't feel like it. And actually, what you can discover is that sometimes in the beginning, when you don't feel like it, you can get into it, and surprise, fun happens. Radio listener Herb wrote to Dr. Laura, "Sex is to a husband what conversation is to a wife. When a wife deprives her husband of sex for days and even weeks on end, it is tantamount to his refusing to talk to her for days, even weeks. Think of it that way, wives, and realize what a deleterious impact enforced sexual abstinence has on a good man who is determined to remain faithful." I love what Dr. Laura put it together, that if you give a man direct communication, respect, appreciation, food, and good loving, he'll be putty in your hands. It is the way that we can obey God and love our husbands well, serve our children well by loving our husbands well, and I hope that this helps you go home and love your husbands well. But let me say again, all we can do is our part. We have no control over how it's accepted or not accepted by our husbands. I am so grateful that God understands this, that he does not hold us accountable for anybody except ourselves. Romans 12:18 says, "As far as it is possible, as much as it depends on you, live at peace with all men." Which means that God understands there are some people that will not live at peace with us. We can do the right thing over and over again, and they will not. And God doesn't hold us accountable for that. He just holds us accountable for our part. So my prayer is for you is that you will live in such a way that when you stand before Jesus in heaven, and it's you and him, and you're looking over your life, he will look at you and say, "Well done, good and faithful servant. Thank you."